Hello, and welcome to World at Law, a podcast from Carter Perry Bailey discussing the law, business, and the business of insurance and reinsurance. I'm Robert Harrison, consultant at CPB, and I'm joined today by Helen Tilley, partner at CPB, to discuss sudden cardiac events and the risk and insurance implications surrounding them. A warm welcome to our existing and new listeners, and of course to you, Helen.
Hello, Robert. Today, we wanted to focus on sports-related risks as a follow-on from the head injury podcast we did last year. And we're particularly going to focus on professional footballers given recent events. So hopefully this will be of interest to any insurers dealing with underwriting or claims regarding professional or amateur sports people. Thankfully, Christian Eriksen is recuperating and he's already undergone a fitting of an ICD device following his cardiac arrest on the 12th of June. I was actually watching that with my family and it was quite a tense moment, I'm sure, for everybody who was watching it and involved.
Yes, I saw that Denmark's captain, Simon Kjær, gave emergency first aid straight away and then the team medics arrived. What are the key points about this 10-minute window?
Well, the crucial thing here in terms of survival rates is that there's a 10% reduction in survival for every minute that a person who's suffering a cardiac arrest is without CPR. And this really highlights the importance of bystander involvement. And the captain, he just did a fantastic job. He moved really, really quickly and seized those very early moments when it's really important to get the CPR and first aid in place, until the point where the team medics arrived by his side. If a person in the UK, for instance, has a cardiac arrest outside hospital, as a general rule of thumb, there's a 10% chance of survival. But luckily, this actually took place in Denmark, and the Scandinavian countries generally have a much better survival rate than other countries. And one of the factors for this is potentially the whole education piece around bystanders and CPR and making the most of those first 10 minutes.
So as of 2019, as I understand it, the survival rate for cardiac arrest in the Scandinavian countries is 16% compared with the 10% as an average in the UK.
Yes.
In that sense, then, a good thing to come out of this is that people will realise the positive benefits of everyone having some knowledge of first aid and CPR.
Definitely. That's right.
I saw in the press there were references to both cardiac attack and cardiac arrest. What's the difference between these two and what's the relevance of this when considering what the cause might be and how to treat it?
So in terms of the difference between cardiac attack and cardiac arrest, cardiac attack is when blood flow is blocked. So the heart muscle needs oxygen, and if there's a lack of oxygen, it becomes damaged. And typically, somebody who suffers a cardiac attack will be older, and the reason for the medical emergency will be because of coronary artery disease, narrowing of the arteries, or perhaps a plaque becomes dislodged and causes the reduction in flow of blood. In terms of cardiac arrest, if somebody is under the age of 35, that will be the first thing that you potentially think about. And it can be very sudden. So here, he was literally playing football and suddenly fell to the ground. Effectively, there's a heart malfunction and it suddenly stops beating. And this is why it's really important to get very, very quick first aid and ideally access to a defibrillator. And over the years, there's been a massive push to position defibrillators in public places such as stations, maybe on the ground floor of a large office block, and particularly in sports stadiums such as this. The important thing here is that if they don't get first aid and if they don't get the heart beating again, there'll be a loss of oxygen to the brain and other organs. And the risk is that there will perhaps be a fatality.
With Christian stabilised, of course, there was then the decision whether to resume play or postpone it until the next day. I know in the end the Denmark and Finland game continued that evening, but there had been some mention of postponement until the next day. When Fabrice Muamba suffered cardiac arrest during the FA quarterfinals in 2012, that match was abandoned, but his emergency treatment and CPR was apparently carried out during well over an hour, whereas Christian Eriksen appears to have stabilised far more quickly.
Yes, so the good thing is because he was stabilised, obviously there would have been discussions with the emergency team and the hospital, so they felt more comfortable to go ahead. And in terms of treatment, What they decided to do was fit an ICD, which is an implantable cardioverter defibrillator. So in a sense, you could regard that as a personal defibrillator that travels around with you just in case there's this further risk of a heart rhythm problem in the future. So it might be a situation where the heart rate starts to slow down, and in that case, the ICD will act as a pacemaker and restore a steady rhythm. Or it could be a sudden stop of the heart where effectively it needs to operate as an electric shock to bring everything back to zero and to revive the heart again.
Yes, I gather that it can be like being kicked in the chest by a horse. An ICD in operation was seen in action on the football field in 2009 when the then Belgium defender Anthony van Loos had an ICD and responded to his arrhythmia within a few seconds and he was standing up. From an insurance perspective, as Christian or any other footballer or sports person having undergone pre-participation tests, is it possible that some conditions won't be picked up?
Yes, it's entirely feasible. From a risk assessment insurance perspective, there has in recent years been increased recognition of the risk associated with playing football. And if you look at different types of sports, it seems to be the sports which have a stop-start nature where there's intensive cardio activity which seem to be more at risk, such as football and potentially also sports such as basketball as well. And over the last two and a half years, there's been research, particularly in relation to football, which is of interest. In terms of Christian, he obviously played for Denmark, but also was playing for the Italian team Inter Milan. And it's interesting that Italy has a long-standing history going back to 1982, where it's been mandatory for every competitive athlete, so not just footballers, to have an annual pre-participation evaluation. And this is quite broad, so it's not just heart-related, but also involves non-heart-related risks as well. It was clear in the very early stages that Christian Eriksen would have gone through pretty thorough regular testing. And this particular incident, as with cardiac arrest incidents, really seems to come out of the blue and is a surprise. But in terms of Italy and their proactive approach to pre-participation evaluations for athletes, the good news is that it does seem to have led to a drop in the incidence of sudden cardiac death amongst competitive athletes. Over a period of about 21 years, in the Veneto area of Italy, they saw a sharp drop of about 79% of these particular incidents of sudden death. So that's all good news. More recently, in Italy, they carried out a study and they were basically looking over a one-year period amongst 6,000 athletes what the value of carrying out these pre-participation evaluations was and whether there were any particular pros or cons to this. This study was first published in July 2019. The key points arising from it are that cost of carrying out these pre-participation evaluations is actually very competitive in the sense that they calculated that for each athlete undergoing these tests, the cost was about €80. So really, economic barrier shouldn't be an issue here. And the way they tried to contain the cost was to use a single physician throughout and to use somebody with a specialist degree in sports and exercise medicine. There would be sort of a standard set of investigations. In Italy, this would include a resting 12-lead ECG as well as an exercise testing with ECG monitoring. If the results of that and the physical evaluation and testing in terms of symptoms and family history indicated, then they would go on to a second line level of tests. And that, they found, was generally happening in just under 10% of the athletes that were being tested. In terms of second line testing, we're talking about echocardiograms, cardiac MRI scans or cardiac CT scans. Those are the types of things that would be the next level of investigations. Obviously, if there was something there to be found and a diagnosis was reached, that would involve more costs. And typically they were finding that the cost would be somewhere between €4,000 and €25,000. Per condition in order to identify particular conditions and reasons which might present a higher risk of sudden cardiac death. However, one thing to bear in mind in terms of this study was that the majority of the study sample of 6,000 athletes were Caucasian, and therefore it didn't have the benefit of having a wider mix of different ethnicities. On top of the issue of whether there's an economic barrier and what sort of tests to carry out, they also looked at the prospects of the athlete being disqualified from competing in their particular line of sport. And that's whether it was temporary or permanent. And generally, they found that there was a 0.5% rate of disqualification. One of the things that is disadvantaged potentially of carrying out these tests is that particularly with ECGs, there's a risk of false positives. So you could get a false positive and then go on to have lots of other tests. And in the meantime, maybe have concerns about your health. But the disqualification rate seems to be fairly low at 0.5%. So turning from Italy to the UK, a well-respected cardiology team is based at St George's Hospital in London, and this particular group is led by Professor Sanjay Sharma. And in August 2018, they published the results of a 10-year study, and this one in particular was focused on footballers. What they did is they looked at 11,000 footballers and they followed them over a 10-year period from the age of about 16 to 17. This particular study identified that the actual risk of a sudden cardiac death amongst elite footballers was considerably higher than previously believed. So the outcome was that they thought, as a result of the study, that the risk was 1 in 14,700. So that's effectively three times greater than the previous estimates they were looking at. And I suppose one of the factors could be, as I said before, the nature of the sport and the stop-start high-intensity activities. So what was the outcome of this particular study from St George's Hospital? Well, whereas before they were generally testing cardiac conditions at the age of 16, they decided to have a more staged approach. So they've added on age 18, 20 and 25. So that is a good thing. And that's something that the FA in the UK have decided to do going forward.
Given that Ericsson now joins Daley Blint from Holland, who also had an ICD fitted, they were both in the late 20s when their myocarditis was identified. Should this evaluation, this testing be more frequent?
Well, this was an August 2018 study, and I think that given those two particular examples and their age, then I think that's something which is ripe for further study and whether there should be more regular testing. St George's also did some more research which was published last summer, that's summer 2020, and they were effectively looking at different types of sportspersons and the rates that had been mentioned in relation to different countries and different types of sporting activity. So I mentioned that for their study, they thought that footballers were at risk of sudden cardiac death at a rate of 1 in 14,700. In terms of these stats coming from the USA National Collegiate Athletics Association, their figures were 1 in roughly 53,000, and very similar figures for male basketball players as well, with 1 in 52,000. The other thing that came out of that study last year was that the male to female ratio of fatality rates is about 9 to 1. So male athletes are at much higher risk of this type of condition. And over 80% of sudden cardiac deaths occur either during intensive training or competition.
Fine. Tell me then, when medical underwriters are considering risks, which type of test results and the frequency of those tests should they be bearing in mind?
If you compare with the rate of sudden cardiac death generally, it's normally viewed at just under 2 in 100,000 people in terms of looking at the risk that this might occur. There's a few considerations. First, athletes' hearts appear different, and that's probably as a result of the training and the effect of that training on the heart muscle. So it's not uncommon for athletes' hearts to be larger. And therefore, it's really important to have experienced people interpreting the scans and the tests that are carried out so that they can recognise the differences specific to athletes' hearts. And that's relevant to one particular condition, hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. You might remember this is the condition that Fabrice Muamba had, and he suffered his cardiac arrest back in March 2012. But the main consideration in terms of underwriting and claims is what the limitations are of the tests. If somebody naturally has a clear test, then the actual person, their club, may feel reassured that everything is okay. But it's important that a sufficient range of tests is carried out and that they're done sufficiently frequently. And I think the frequency is one of the issues which is very much in the forefront in terms of the studies and looking forward. And on top of all this is the new considerations that arise from COVID-19. But I think we'll come on to that a little bit later. Turning to testing for footballers, both FIFA and UEFA state that there needs to be a physical examination and medical questionnaire is carried out. They're looking at both their own symptoms as well as family history. But in terms of what's mandatory, they have to have the 12-lead ECG. But interestingly, they also need to have an echocardiogram. And this type of investigation looks at the structure of the heart. So the good news is that with UEFA, the pre-participation tests of players are generally more thorough than some other sports association. The way I look at it is if there's any machinery involved, so if there's a car or a motorcycle or footballers, then you're generally going to find greater requirements in terms of these pre-participation tests. However, there are limitations in the sense that even if somebody undergoes all the screening, and this happened in relation to Christian Eriksen, it doesn't eliminate the fact that they might have an episode such as this, particularly in the under 35 sort of age group. The other thing to bear in mind is that in the sad event of somebody actually dying, you don't always get answers. Normally, if post-mortem is carried out, they should be taking histological tests and carrying out an examination of those. But even after all of that, although those sort of tests might detect, say, myocarditis, a condition called ARVC or conduction abnormalities, the evidence, particularly from Italy, is that there can be a 6% rate of no reason being found at all for the particular fatality. Whilst there's a vast number of different reasons for cardiac arrest, the majority are arrhythmias. And it's convenient to look at the potential causes in three possible groups. Firstly, there's electrical. And this group generally accounts for about 50% of sudden cardiac deaths. One example would be long QT syndrome, which accounts for 40%. Most common whilst people are swimming. And secondly, a particular condition named after a Spanish cardiologist, Brugada syndrome. Brugada syndrome typically, however, occurs at rest, quite often in the morning, and the mean age is 40. It also is quite prevalent if somebody is involved in endurance sports, such as long distance running, cycling, triathlons and things like that. A second area to consider in terms of the reason for cardiac arrest is structural problems with the heart. And these are the areas where the focus generally is where the person is young. And by young, the medics normally associate this with anybody under the age of 35. In terms of structural causes, the most common at 26% is hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, which I mentioned earlier. And this was a condition that Fabrice Muamba was diagnosed with. The good news is that if you have this condition, then 90% of people will reveal some sort of abnormality on an ECG test. It's effectively a heart muscle disease. What they will do is they will use ECGs to give an indicator that this type of condition might be suspected, and then they'll go on to carry out an echocardiogram. What they're looking for is the thickness of the left ventricle wall. If it's more than 50 millimetres thick, then that's an area of concern. And the grey area is generally between about 13 to 14 millimetres. But the crucial point here is that because athletes' hearts the nature of the training and things like that can lead to larger hearts and thickening, it's very important that when the scans are being considered, that somebody experienced in seeing athletes' hearts is interpreting the scans. In Italy in particular, one of the conditions which seems to be more prevalent, and also in the Mediterranean populations generally, is a condition which I won't try to pronounce the whole name, but shortened to ARVC. This particular condition was detected in the Belgian player Anthony Van Loos, and the treatment that he underwent was an ICD fitting, so similar to the treatment that Christian has had. However, SCD, sudden cardiac death, might actually be the first arrhythmic event in 50% of cases where ARVC is the reason. There are many other cardiomyopathies, others being AC, which fortunately 80% of cases will have an abnormal ECG. In that particular case with AC, the general view, if somebody has been diagnosed with it, is that they should generally avoid moderate intensity exercise. So you will see that there are slightly different views in terms of treatment and future activity depending upon the particular condition. I mentioned a bit earlier about basketball players. Obviously, basketball players are likely to be tall, and there's a condition called Marfan syndrome, which is quite often associated with people who are taller than average. And that might account for the prevalence of these types of conditions in the US. And then looking at the third different area, so we've covered electrical, structural, and now the third, which I grouped together as miscellaneous other conditions. Myocarditis. This was a condition that I understand that Christian was diagnosed with. But looking at all of these conditions in the round, I think the main point that comes out in terms of medical treatment and improving outcomes going forward is that the medics are really keen for there to be consistency of recording of data and just generally better data so that they can use this to determine testing protocols going forward and also return to play. And they're particularly interested in getting data about people who have suffered a cardiac arrest and survived. So if we look at some limitations of the various test investigations, the crucial point is that most athletes are asymptomatic before sudden cardiac death. So it really will come out of the blue. And therefore, when something like this happens, so if there's a cardiac arrest and the person thankfully survives, it's really important to have good data about that, because that will help to inform about conditions going forward, how to treat them, the frequency of testing and things like that. And the key message from the medical fraternity is about getting consistent recording of data and just generally better data, particularly where the outcome is good. And even though the person has suffered a cardiac arrest, they have survived. In terms of the variety of testing, routine echocardiograms, echoes, are not thought to add substantially to the diagnostic power. So that's the routine ones. But they are useful in terms of showing the structure of the heart. And they can also be very helpful in terms of assessing whether there's an impaired left ventricular function. So what happens is, if they are not part of the first line testing, then the sports association will carry them out if other information indicates that it could be useful. Another type of scan which is also considered is cardiac magnetic resonance imaging. This is potentially helpful for myocarditis, but it's generally considered to be quite an expensive test. So it's not normally one of the first line types of regular tests that are carried out. But although it's very common for these incidents just to happen out of the blue, it is useful to keep details of potential symptoms that the person's had in the recent past, such as fainting and things like that.
So the message that consistently comes out of the medical studies is that there needs to be more consistent recording of data and better data on those who've had a good outcome following cardiac arrest and survive. As I understand it, there could be genetic or hereditary reasons which, if examined, could reveal vulnerabilities, shall we say. I know that the Dutch footballers Frank and Ronald de Boer, who both play international football for Holland, where discovery of one condition alerted the investigation being carried out into the sibling. I don't know whether that can be, and one can understand why that might be undertaken where there are twins. There are, of course, plenty of instances of brothers and sisters playing international sport or sport to a very high level. I don't know whether those vulnerabilities might be established just in siblings as opposed to twins or triplets. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, there are particular organisations which will assist families. So if there has been a particular event such as this, then there's availability for family members to be tested. And there's a particular charity, Cardiac Risk for the Young, shortened to CRY, C-R-Y. But if there has been a sudden cardiac fatality, the post-mortem might not be definitive. With the younger age groups, so those are the under 35s, about 27 to 29% of those undergoing a post-mortem won't reveal any structural heart problem. And when the Italians have looked at the whole issue of prospects of identifying the reason for death for cardiac reasons, they generally found that after a post-mortem and even after histologic examination, there would be about 6% where there would be no detectable abnormality revealed. So no reason that could potentially be investigated by other members of the family in order to avoid a similar situation happening again.
Well, I certainly don't blame you for shortening arrhythmogenic right ventricular cardiomyopathy to ARVC, because I can hardly pronounce it myself. Obviously, looking then at discovery of vulnerabilities, what are the prospects of returning to play and what factors are needed to be taken into account when that happens?
Well, you've already mentioned Daley Blint. He returned, I believe, to the Netherlands in early 2020, having had his cardiac arrest just 2 or so months prior to that. So it really does depend upon the medical reason. And sometimes when I'm looking at cases, there will be more than one cardiac issue. So they could have a genetic issue and other things in play as well. And it also depends upon, obviously, the severity. Where the particular athlete is involved in competitive sport can make a difference as well. So I mentioned that Italy has a gold standard in terms of being, over many decades, very thorough in terms of pre-participation testing for all athletes, so not just footballers. But it follows from this that they do tend to have stricter protocols as well. And I think that the indication from the press at this stage is that given that Christian Eriksen plays for Inter Milan, because he's had an ICD fitted, if that remains fitted, then this could mean that if he wishes to play football going forward, then he might need to consider moving outside of Italy, Serie A.
Yes, Christian has previously played for Ajax in the Netherlands, where a fellow player, as we've discussed, Daley Blint, also had a cardiac arrest and was fitted with an ICD. He returned to play, as you say, in early 2020 and was last seen in the Dutch team playing in the UEFA European Championships. Press reports indicate that Christian was diagnosed after his incident with myocarditis, which is that self-same condition as Daley Blint's.
In terms of timescales, obviously Christian's cardiac arrest happened about mid-June. So at the 3 or 4 week point, so around about the time of the final, they'll be reviewing his condition. And as a general rule of thumb, if he's going to be looking to return to play football, probably outside Italy, as I mentioned, a rough timescale would be sort of 3 to 6 months. So it is quite a hopeful outcome in terms of Christian.
So has there been any research about the risks of playing sport after testing positive for COVID-19?
Well, you'll remember that this particular condition, myocarditis, that's also been mentioned in the context of COVID-19. A lot has been learnt in terms of the effects of COVID-19, but there remains a lot that the medical fraternity are looking into and considering going forward. If you consider myocarditis as an inflammatory condition, one of the causes of that could be a virus. And for those who have tested positive for COVID-19, myocarditis might be one of the ongoing effects that they suffer from going forward. In terms of testing in the States, the universities were quite quick off the mark, and they carried out a study which started in March and went through until December in 2020. And what's called the Big Ten Cardiac Registry in the States did, they tested about 9,000 athletes who had undergone positive COVID-19 tests in order to identify those who had either clinical or subclinical, so weren't presenting with symptoms, myocarditis. So out of the 9,000 tests that were carried out, 2.3% had clinical or subclinical myocarditis. And the outcome of this was that even before the study over the March-December period, by September 2020, the Big Ten has stated that there must be more advanced testing for all athletes who've had a COVID-19 infection. And those tests need to be carried out before they return to play. And the types of tests that they stated would need to be included would be the ECG, so the 12-lead ECG that I mentioned before, echocardiograms, also testing for serum troponin levels. So if anybody has a heart attack, typically this is the test which would be carried out as soon as they get to A&E. And finally, cardiac magnetic resonance imaging, so much clearer imaging. However, I think one of the potential drawbacks of this American study was that there was some data that they didn't collect. So they didn't collect data about ethnicity. And I think if they had, I think that would have given them more information and more of a steer. But I imagine that that's something that might be coming up in the future. The big question is when to carry these tests out in terms of the optimum time for carrying them out in order to get the best results.
Indeed. Well, one hopes that the vaccine programme is extended as soon as possible to as many as possible, if not everyone. Have there been any other effects then of COVID-19?
I think one of the effects of lockdown, particularly in spring last year, is that the first lockdown was a much more severe lockdown. So even first responder services such as Good Sam was suspended. I think in the early stages, when we didn't know as much in terms of transmission, there was caution in terms of allowing programmes such as that where people can get to a scene very quickly. They'll just get a mobile message and then an ambulance will turn up a few moments after that. I think that certainly had an effect on survival rates. So just looking at the rates of survival in London, whereas I mentioned earlier that if you have a cardiac arrest outside of hospital, normally the survival rate is about 10%. During the spring lockdown last year in London, this dropped to 4.4%. So it's partly due to the reduction in people being available to respond as quickly, and also just the simple practicality of putting on PPE. Given that the first 10 minutes is so crucial, if somebody's spending a couple of minutes putting on PPE at the scene, then that can have an effect upon survival rates. And also, I think, finally, there were a greater volume of incidents anyway, so resources were spread more thinly.
Staying with COVID-19, what effects have there been on event postponements and cancellations?
Well, similar to the reduced availability of responders such as Good Sam during lockdown, there's been a general reduced availability of first aiders. So as well as venues being closed, even when they were permitted to open, there was the other factor of, are there enough first responders to meet the minimum requirements for the number of people we're expecting at a particular venue? So can we carry it out safely in terms of potential medical emergencies taking place? And these are considerations on top of the social distancing and need to reduce the risks of transmission. In terms of testing, I think back in February, the government gave the go-ahead for what was called the Events Research Programme, and they effectively chose different events. I think one of the earlier ones was a clubbing night in Liverpool, where people who would attend the event agreed to a certain protocol of testing before and afterwards in order to try to measure different levels of contact, different environments, and whether that had an impact upon the number of people who were tested positive in the few days after the event. And as well as the Liverpool clubbing event, there was monitoring for the World Snooker Championships, where over a 17-day period, 10,000 people gathered, and in that situation there were 6 positive cases. The Brit Awards, probably a third of the amount of people, but there were no positive cases after that. And then increasingly, different events have been chosen to try to increase upon the figures and look at different environments. So the FA Cup semi-finals and the finals were monitored. And I understand that the Wimbledon final will also be monitored with higher occupancy rates as well. So it's effectively all looking towards moving towards a greater normality, but in a staged way. And I think that there was also an adaptation to the UEFA rules in terms of looking at what the protocol would be if particular team members had to self-isolate. And I think they brought it down to a minimum requirement that in order for games to proceed, there would just simply need to be 13 players, including one goalkeeper. So they had to look at practicalities of trying to get competitive sports moving and up and running.
Well, I can say from personal experience that this coming Saturday I'm going to Lord's to watch England against Pakistan in a one-day international. It's the first time there will have been a full crowd allowed back at Lord's since the various lockdowns and other interventions have come into place. I have several measures to undertake prior to the game and on admission, and I think I'm being encouraged as well to participate in some study as well. All that, of course, against the backdrop of, I believe it is later today, Prime Minister's due to confirm that the 19th of July will all be released from these measures. Any other measures will be undertaken on a voluntary basis. So, of course, that's going to be quite an abrupt cliff edge day from incidents of participants and players. And I think all the Wimbledon players are hotelled together and cricketers have all been isolated in single venues. So it's going to be a considerable change in, of course, a summer of sport. We've got the cricket test series, the Lions on tour in South Africa. Soon to come, we've got the Tokyo 2020 Olympics. The Olympics, of course, having been postponed for the very first time, other than for wartime reasons. And last but not least, as we sit and speak here on Monday the 5th of July, in 2 days' time, there's a certain football match between England and Denmark, which has extra poignancy as far as CPB is concerned, albeit the majority of CPB's people, one could expect, might support the English team, even though there are a few other home nationals in the firm. We have a Danish lawyer with us as well, so there might be split loyalties there. Thanks very much, Helen. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast. If so, please email us with your ideas for future subjects. Bye for now.